My name's Judy, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Judy.
By the grace of a loving God and the magic program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink one day at a time since July 16th, 1985. Now, if you weren't born that year, please resist the urge to tell me after the meeting, okay? I have this elder phobia, so. However, you know, I'm really just as grateful as I know how to be for that, but I'm more grateful for my desire to be sober today, because as you all know, today's really the only day I have. So what can I tell you about me? If you ever saw The Wonder Years or that 70s show, that would encapsulate my childhood. That was the era I grew up in. I grew up in Pittsburgh, back when it really was the Steel City. You know, there it was primarily a blue-collar town. You know, dinner on the table at 5, your mother didn't work. You know, it was a pretty nice place to live, quite frankly. In the borough in which I lived, I would say the average family size was 5 or 6 kids, and I was the only child I knew in the whole borough. So, you know, right out of the gate, I always felt like I was, you know, different from everybody else. I was literally the only person who had my own bedroom, and I was the only one that wanted, you know, to have siblings share a room with me because I watched horror movies all the time. So anyway, that was pretty much what my childhood looked like, except for, I will say, I probably had an edge over most alcoholics, because my mother told me when I was in kindergarten I was going to be an alcoholic. She said, alcohol runs in the family. That's what we say in Pittsburgh. We have some things that are drilled into us early on, and one of them is stuff runs in the family. So if you drink, Judy, you will be an alcoholic. And, you know, she's the kind of person that, like, is always right. You know, don't take your car out tonight, Judy, because the roads are bad. Don't go to that Deep Purple concert. And there's one piece of ice on one bridge, and now you're calling the tow truck, figuring out where to hide the bottle of vodka before the police get there. So, you know, so it was in the cards, I would say. But, you know, I said, well, what if she's wrong? That's what most people say about their mother, right? So, you know, I probably started drinking early, like maybe 14, something like that. And, you know, that thought was always in the back of my mind. You know, she said, you're going to be an alcoholic. But I said, well, you know, what if I miss out on all that fun? So my plan was, I'll go ahead and drink, and if it turns out I'm an alcoholic, I'll stop. Okay, y'all, so that was the plan. I didn't realize it then, but, you know, that was what I formulated. And I would say from the very first time I ever took a drink, I always drank like it meant something to me. Like, I could always tell, I mean, looking back, I probably couldn't tell then, but looking back, I would say I always drank differently than the folks I was drinking with. You know, they could take it or leave it. I mean, I was probably 16 when I had my first blackout, although I didn't know that that was a blackout. I just thought it was a really bad night. But, you know, it was always different for me than normal people, I guess. So, you know, I drank off and on. I didn't drink all the time. And I had a really hard time finding a boyfriend. I was 20 before I had found my first boyfriend. And so I figured I just better marry this boy, because what if I have to wait another 20 years? Right? So I met my husband when I was 20. You know, we both grew up in that same town, so we have the same values. I guess we grew up with the same values. He liked to drink too, but he wasn't an alcoholic. So Mike and I, we got married. Well, we moved to Dallas. We moved to Texas, and because his brothers lived there. You know, all those steel mills were shutting down by then, and the jobs were drying up. So we moved to Texas. We got married when I was 22. And still, you know, I was still okay. You know, I wasn't drinking like all the time. Yeah, I'm that person, you guys, in that big book. And when the big book talks about that person that's trying to lead that double life. You know, I wanted people to see me a certain way, and I didn't want them to know, you know, about me. So I always tell people I'm like I was like a kitchen drinker. I didn't ever go out to bars. I just drank at home. So, you know, we got a house, and a few years later we had a little boy. I was certain by then I was already worried that I was an alcoholic, and so I thought, well, I'll have a baby and then everything will be okay, because if I am pregnant, I can't drink, and if I have a baby to worry about, I won't drink. I mean, that was the plan. I'm looking back, I think that was a pretty flawed plan, but I was what I did, and we had a little boy, just like the cutest little boy you would ever want to meet, and you know, I held it together for a while. And of course, the day always came when I convinced myself again I could drink like everybody else. My husband got a job where he had to travel a lot. He was out of town like maybe 35 out of 52 weeks. I mean, he was gone a lot. So I just fell into this routine where I would go to work, come home. I only drank every other day because on the alternate days I was too sick to drink. And I would just start picking up the phone and calling everybody in the greater Pittsburgh area. If your area code was 412, I was probably calling you. So, and now you had to remember, there was no free long distance then. There were no cell phones. No, I don't even think, we didn't have a cordless phone. And there was no caller ID, so those poor guys on the other end of that phone. You know, I'm sure my phone bill would have been much smaller if there would have been caller ID. Because, you know, once they, I guess I could hear it and there was, oh, Judy, it's you. So, you know, this went on for quite a while. And my poor husband, he would call me from out of town and he would say, Judy, call the phone company. Because the phone bill was $200. They must not have got our payment last month. And I said, well, I think they did. So, all this irrational stuff. I used to pray that the phone bill wouldn't come. Or, you know, where am I going to hide the phone bill? That's some pretty crazy thinking, right? So anyway, poor Mike, he didn't really know what to do. And, you know, I'm the kind of person, I'm really good. My one good skill is getting people to do stuff for me. You know, and so I tried to get Mike to fix me. You know, I said, you know, you're the reason I drink. If it weren't for you traveling all the time, I'm working, taking care of Jim by myself. I mean, he was convinced. I had him convinced, but he couldn't help me, turns out. So, you know, that went on for a little while. I think by the time I was 27, you know, I knew I was an alcoholic. Things were starting to fall apart, you know. I mean, you know, I still think I'm fooling people, you know, but I think I was pretty close to losing my job. Things weren't going good. I'm sure, you know, my poor son, you know, I wasn't taking as good a care of him as I should have. So, but I was afraid to tell people I was an alcoholic. I was just so ashamed about that. But finally, I had to tell somebody. So I worked with these two ladies that were 10, 20 years older than me. And I went to lunch with them, and I said, I think I'm an alcoholic. I said, now, these two women, they probably never finished a drink between the two of them. I mean, they literally were not drinkers. And this lady said to me, I know this guy who's an alcoholic. Do you want me to have him give you a call? So I said, okay, because, you know, in that very moment, I would have done anything. But, you know, then a couple days passed, and I started convincing myself that maybe, you know, I was just overreacting. Because, you know, I'm a skilled rationalizer. Oh, I'm skilled at that, too. You know, I can convince myself that a Diet Coke will cancel out the calories in a Snicker bar. You know, so by the time that phone rang, and again, no caller ID, or if that would have said Abe on there, I probably would have just let it go to voicemail. So Abe called me, and he said, Judy, I understand you're an alcoholic. I mean, just like that. And by this time, you know, I said, well, Abe, I think I may have a drinking problem. That's what I told him. And he said, you're an alcoholic. I mean, if that guy, it was like that guy reached through the phone and smacked me in the face. And he said, because you know what? Normal people do not go around wondering if they're alcoholic. You know, they just have a bad night and get over it and it's done. So he said, why don't we meet for lunch? And we'll talk. I mean, what am I going to say? So I said, okay, babe. And so we went somewhere and got a hamburger. I never touched that hamburger. And Abe told me, he told me his story. He told me what happened, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And, you know, I thought he was pretty old, but he was probably like, in his 40s. But he told me, he said, Judy, you have a disease of the mind and the body and the soul. And I thought, oh my God, I got three diseases. And I mean, and you know, I went to that lunch, y'all, with thinking one of two things was going to happen. That Abe was going to say, Judy, you're just a nice girl from Pittsburgh, and I think you're overreacting. I think you should go home and not worry about it. Or I was going to have lunch with him, and like a one and done, you know. I was going to have lunch with Abe, and then I was going to be able to quit drinking. And he said, you need to get a higher power, if that's God, whoever it is. He said, get up in the morning, ask him to help you get through today without a drink. At night, kiss your little boy on the head and say goodnight and thank God, or whoever is your higher power. He said, if it's whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are, thank you for getting me through this day. Then I want you to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, get a big book, get a sponsor, work the steps. Now, this guy just told me I have a deadly disease. Yeah. You know, and one of, you know, I'm going to stop drinking. I'm either going to stop drinking, or I'm going to go to jail, or I'm going to go to some insane asylum. But in the end, I will quit drinking. And I'm thinking, well, I got aerobics on Tuesday and Thursday night. And, you know, a full-time job and a kid to take care of. And I like Stephen King. You know, so I thought to myself when I pulled out of that parking lot, I thought, well, I'll do the God thing, you know, and let's see how that works. So that worked for about 30 days or a month or something. And my husband and I were going out to dinner, and I said to Mike, I think I'm going to drink tonight. And he said, because I had convinced myself again, you know, maybe I was okay. Maybe I'm like other people. I really wanted to be like other people. And Mike said, well, it's okay, Judy. You just have to know when to stop. And I said, that's the ticket. That's the ticket. I just need to know when to stop. So, you know, of course, y'all know how that worked out. That set off another 2 years of that, I don't know, merry-go-round, I guess, right? Because for me, drinking was a full-time job. I was either drinking, I was worrying about what I did when I was drinking, or I was worrying about when I would drink again. That was like my whole life, covering stuff up. Where am I going to hide the telephone bill? Like it'll go away. I mean, a lot, it's just all that insanity. So another 2 years of that went by. And my poor husband, you know, it's all your fault, I'm drinking, whatever. He wasn't there for a lot of it. So, you know, I'm sure that's why I'm still married. But, but you know, that then, I don't know, a lot of stuff happened. And one night, it was in July of 1985. I can't remember what happened that night, but you know how, well, I have flashes of memory of what happened, and I know whatever happened, I really hurt him, I'm sure, with whatever I was saying. So I was sitting on my front porch. As you guys know, it's pretty hot in Texas in July. But I was sitting on my front porch, and I said, God, what am I going to do? Please help me figure out what to do. And on the front stoop is this little city rag paper, and it says AA meets on Tuesday nights. And I thought, wow, I bet I hold the world's record for prayers answered, like, quickly. So I said to my husband, I'm going to go to this AA meeting on Tuesday night. Of course, by the time Tuesday got there, I was thinking I was okay again. And he said, Jesus Christ, Judy. I mean, that's like, if we had a family crest, that would, what would it would say? Jesus Christ, Judy, I am so tired of you telling me you think you're an alcoholic, and, you know, just go to the GD meeting and do it. So, I don't know, I think I came to this meeting, it was like from 8 to 9, and I got there almost right before it ended. And it was in this little house. I wouldn't even lay my purse down. I was afraid something would crawl in it. It was this little rundown house. And I knew I needed to get a big book because Abe told me to. I need a big book, and they didn't have any that night. And there was a gentleman there who had a first edition AA book. I think we were only on the second edition then. And he said to me, you take my book, and when you get your book, you can give it back to me. I was really blown away by that. I mean, because, you know, it had all his notes in it. So I went home, and like 2 a.m., I'm still reading this book. My husband comes, he goes, Judy, I don't think they meant for you to read that all in one night. Right? But, you know, the answers to my questions were in that book. People who knew me were in that book. I mean, I could never write a book, especially a book like that, but I just couldn't believe, you know, for the first time in a very long time, I wasn't alone. It was like the book was written for me or something. So I couldn't go to 90 meetings in 90 days because they only met on Tuesday and Thursday nights. But, and my husband, you know, he's a really good guy. Pat will tell you, he's a really good guy. But he was a little jealous of y'all, I think. Because after a while, he would say, do you get like a gold star for perfect attendance at your meetings? And I'm thinking, what a jerk. But I didn't, I mean, you think you'd just be happy I'm not drinking. But I never said anything. But, you know, it was quite a journey, right? Because I really wasn't, I would say, I don't even know why God kept me sober all these years, except maybe to tell you guys what's a bad idea, because I didn't really follow a conventional program, although I wish I would have. I went to my meetings every Tuesday and Thursday, and of course, the first step was a no-brainer, right? I mean, my life was unmanageable. There was no doubt about that. But I got hung up on the insanity part, you know, because again, you know, I'm from Pittsburgh, so, you know, you don't tell people your problems. My mom once got mad at me because she thought I was going to tell my uncle I was going to a dermatologist for acne. I thought, I think he can tell, you know. So it was hard for me to think that. But you think about it. I mean, normal people are not thinking of hiding the telephone from themselves. And, you know, it is insane, right? To know you can't drink, but every time thinking, okay, this time it's going to be different. All those analogies in the book about how when you keep jaywalking or you keep touching a flame, I mean, that is truly the definition of insanity. But, you know, I had to come to those meetings and listen to y'all talk. That's where I got the answers to my questions. Or, you know, I could accept that this truly was happening to me. That's what I kept thinking. You know, I was leading a pretty relatively trouble-free life till alcohol came along. So I had to keep accepting that was the case. The first time I heard somebody in a meeting talk about having a $200 phone bill, I almost fell off my chair because I could identify with that. So anyway, I did work the steps, but you know, I had a lot of good people in that Dallas group that helped me, you know, because they could tell, you know, people know, like they would say, it's like, well, I don't know, I'm not even sober a month. Do you have any questions? You know, what can we help you with? I said, I'm fine. You know, I suffered from the I'm fines. So I could see them shooting a look at each other like, she looks fine, doesn't she? Sure, she's fine. And one gentleman told me, he said, you know, you'll come here, Judy, and you'll see a lot of people picking up chips. And then you'll see 1 or 2 year chips. And then, when you get into the 5 and the 10 year chips, you don't see as many because people aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. So, the fourth step, I mean, I have any trouble with the third step. I want people to do stuff for me, so I was plenty ready to turn stuff over to God. But the fourth step, you know, I was struggled with. Should I type it? Should I double space it? Should I single space it? Where am I going to hide it? Because I don't want anyone to see it. Can I do it in my head? I got a lot of head shaking for that. No, Judy. No, ma'am, you can't do it in your head. It was just really hard. And some friends of mine there gave me a book, some tapes, some Joe and Charlie tapes. And so I listened to them, and those guys said, get a piece of paper and a pencil and just write it down. I mean, somebody had even given me like some big outline, and one of the questions was, did I have sex with animals? I said, well, no, thank God for that, no. So when these Joe and Charlie guys said, just get a piece of paper, write it like it is in the big book, and just start writing. And so that's what I did. And then it was done. Finally, it was on paper. Nobody found it. And then I had a lady who I asked to be my sponsor. I asked somebody who I knew would never call me, you know, wouldn't ever be hard on me. But I told her my story. I did my fifth step. And so I finally, you know, made it through the steps. I would say that took over 2 years. It took me over 2 years because I went to a speaker meeting in month one, and the guy said, by the end of your second year, you should have done your fourth step. And I said, oh, good, I got 1 year, 11 months to worry about that. And I took every one of them, but I would tell you that after I got done with that, I wish I would have done it right away. Because it was the anticipation of it was worse than doing it, as is most things, right? So I got through the steps, and I made my amends. By this time, I had a daughter, so she was born about a year after I was sober. So I'm happy to report she has never seen me take a drink. When she was in, 4 or 5, she saw somebody take a drink or have a beer a woman, and she said, that woman is a mother. She shouldn't be drinking. And I thought, well, that's good. That was good to hear. But I think I was 5 years sober before I told my mother that I was an alcoholic. Because remember, you know, I didn't want her to know she was right. No, seriously, I was really worried about telling her, because, you know, this is a woman who, when I was 22, called me in Texas to find out where does she buy a bottle of vodka, because, you know, you can only do it in a state store up in Pennsylvania, and I think the only thing that was ever missing from that bottle was two screwdrivers that her and my grandmother drank, and so she never drank. So I did finally, I had a friend, and he told me, we started at the exact same time, and we were the exact same age, but he was like light years ahead of me in this program. His name was Marvin, and he said to me, Judy, when you don't want to do something that you're supposed to in this program, just ask God for the willingness to do it. Not when you're ready, but when he's ready. Because I said, I just like to know what she's going to say before I tell her. And he said, just keep praying, Judy. Just keep praying. So I did finally tell her. She came for a visit, and I said, I have something to tell you. I'm sure she was going to, thought I was going to say change hair colors or something. And I said, I'm an alcoholic. And she was like, oh, okay. But, you know, so that was good, because, you know, when she would come to visit, I'd be running into people in the grocery store from my AA meetings, and they'd say hi, and she'd say, how do you know them? Oh, I just do, you know. But frankly, that was a good question, because until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had no friends, not one. I had coworkers, and I had family. And that was it, because, again, I'm in my kitchen drinking, you know. And so, you know, what a gift, right? I mean, to have that kind of freedom one day at a time, to be able to not take a drink. That prison I was in, I have a daily reprieve from. And I don't know if you all ever saw this movie, called Fatal Attraction. It's kind of old now, but this guy was cheating on his wife, and you know, she was a little crazy, that lady that he was cheating on with. And so, but he was sitting, there was a scene where he was sitting there, and his wife and his daughter were talking, and you know, they didn't really have anything, a care in the world. They were just talking, but him, he's sitting there because he has all this guilt. And I thought, you know, I know exactly what that man is feeling at that moment. Although I never cheated on my husband, I always like to say, because there were no men in my kitchen. You know, everything happened right there in the kitchen, which is ironic. But I, you know, all that remorse and regret, I didn't have after a while. But, you know, I never thought that would happen for me, even though, you know, it was an unconventional program. Every time you guys told me some promise or something that was going to happen, I said, well, that might be the way it is for y'all, but that'll never happen for me. I'll always want to take a drink. You know, I'll always, and, you know, how am I going to get through the rest of my life without a drink? And people kept saying, Judy, you don't have to go the rest of your life. You just have to do it today. And so, you know, those were the things that people told me that kept me going. There's a certain amount of things that you guys have told me that I know to be true with today. I don't want any evidence of. And, you know, that is that I just have today, and that this is a progressive disease. So if I pick up a drink today, I won't be back where I started. That would be frightening enough, but I would be wherever I would be had I continued to drink these last 32 years. So that would probably be a pretty quick demise, I would think, by now, right? I don't want any evidence of that. I'm just going to take you at your word. I had a friend named Max that told me people that don't come to meetings don't get to find out what happens to people who don't come to meetings. I believe that. We moved here maybe 18 years ago, 17 years ago we moved here. And, you know, I'm not good with change. You know, I had that little group and that little colony and the colony in Texas. And so I bet the people in my meeting wouldn't fill this one table. So then I come here and look at y'all, right? There's all these huge meetings. So I struggled for a while. I didn't have a sponsor. I wasn't coming to meeting like I was supposed to. And then I came into the Breakfast Club, and there was Pat. And so I said, I'm going to ask Pat to be my sponsor. I'm like 15 or so years sober. I don't know how long I was sober then, but more than that. But what a gift that was for Pat to be my sponsor. I can't believe I missed out on having a sponsor all those years. Like, you know, not one that I knew was not going to call me or make me do anything. And so whenever I get into a bind or I need to talk to somebody, because I would say the last 5 years of my life have been kind of eventful. I'll say they've been eventful for somebody like me, you know, because I don't like things messy and I don't like conflict or anything. So it's been kind of a ride. My mom was sick for a very long time and she lives with us. Again, the only child thing, right? You know, I was thinking my kingdom for a sibling. But you know, probably that was God's way of making me, you know, step up and do what I was supposed to do. Because, you know, if I'd have had a sibling, I'd probably been three states away throwing money at that, because I am really scared of sick people. They scare me pretty bad. So Pat helped me talk my way through that. My ER game was pick out the nurse that you know. I know her, I know her. Then my mom passed away in March, so got through that. We've had some other issues which have caused me to now join Al-Anon. So it was still, Chris, that's very different from here, but it's very helpful. Pat asked me, did I say I was an alcoholic? And I said, yeah, but they didn't look impressed. I mean, it's funny because when I was, before I was in AA and even after, I was just terrified to tell anybody I was an alcoholic. In fact, I probably passed up an opportunity at one time to help somebody because I was afraid to do that. And after that happened, I said, okay, here's my rule. You know, I don't get up on a soapbox and just tell a million people I'm an alcoholic. But I never lie about it. And if I think it can help somebody, I'm going to say that I'm an alcoholic. I don't know. It's very different, right? Because before it was up to me when I quit drinking. But with this person that I love a lot, I have no control over that. So that's been very difficult, being on the other end of this disease. But trying one day at a time to not get involved, or, you know, turn that person that who I truly love over to God, so that. And, you know, leave the results up to him. I like that little saying, pray but row the boat or something. So I'm trying, those Al-Anon people, they're making me work on me again. I don't know. So you know, that's what I'm trying to do. But I don't know, y'all. I can't really put into words what a gift this program has been for me. I think Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob were some very smart guys. When I read the big book, I think, I can't even fathom sitting down and writing a book like that. I'm just so grateful, and I'm so grateful for you guys and for these meetings, because I don't think if I read a story once where in one of the books that this lady lived in Texas back when AA first started, and they just sent her a book. And I don't really know if I could have gotten it just from a book, you know, because, you know, in addition to being an alcoholic, I think I'm ADD, self-diagnosed, of course, but my mind tends to wander. So I have to, you know, I have to have you guys to point stuff out to me when I'm doing something wrong. I think somebody I know is in therapy, and I think it's like $85 a week, and I think I would just go to AA because you could get that therapy a lot cheaper there. and a lot of people that that love you and that want to see you do well. I mean, where else can you get that? The guy that gave me his book, never knowing if he'd get it back, he was homeless at one time. And he once told me that you could fill a football stadium with his ex-wives. but if you met that guy in the street, you would never believe he was that person. You know, because so sober, and with this program, we are some wonderful people, I think. As long as we simply don't pick up a drink today. I mean, what other disease can you say people have that abstinence and, you know, going to meetings with good people and working some steps that are really a blueprint for living for me? Because it turned out being an adult was not really my thing. You know, my first impulse when trouble comes is to run. So the steps give me a blueprint by which to live a normal life, I think. And I don't have to take a drink today if I don't want to. I once heard Oprah Winfrey say, I think she's an alcoholic. I once heard Oprah Winfrey say, God gives everybody choice and responsibility. You're free to make the choices you want, but you're responsible for the choices that you make. And I was really good at the choice part, but that whole responsibility thing was not my thing. So I make better choices today if I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing in this program. And so it's very simple. I don't know why I resisted it for so long. Anyway, I think that's all. I'm grateful that you guys took the time to listen to me today, and grateful for my desire to be sober. Thanks. Oh, yes, yes, woo!